Three potheads start selling high-grade marijuana so they can raise enough bail money to help their friend. For 420, special guest Samantha Noah joins us to discuss high school stoners, who's on the Mount Rushmore of stand-up comedians, and not smoking up with Snoop. Then we find out if Half-Baked stands the test of time.
James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today? James says Gladiator with a glut. Alan says as a father, blah blah. It's the test of time. James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today? Test of time. James and Alan have their say. Do the movies you love still hold up today?
Hello everyone, this is James Brief with the Test of Time podcast. Put down your Billy Bong Thorntons and stay tuned for a great episode of the Test of Time. I'm joined here, as always, with the director of this podcast, Alan Noah. How are you, Al?
I am doing very well, thank you, James. And we are joined by my sister, Samantha Noah, coming back on the show.
Hi, did you say joined or joint?
I said joined, but I meant joint.
Oh, okay.
And we are recording this episode in a haze of bong smoke. No, we're not.
Yes, we are.
I wouldn't want to record high. I would be too anxious and worried about every single thing I would say.
That means you're not smoking a strain that's meant for you. You have to experiment until you find the right strain, and then you'll be fine and you won't be paranoid. And that's why it is great and wonderful and legal.
Okay. All right. Well, that is something we will have to revisit, I guess.
Sure. Hi, Mom.
She knows. It's fine.
She knows.
But yeah, you wanted to come back on the podcast to talk about this movie, Half-Baked. 420 seemed like the most appropriate time to do it.
Absolutely.
And it occurred to me that the first movie that you came on the podcast for was also a stoner comedy. That was Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
I thought of that too.
So, I mean, it's kind of a theme now, I guess.
I thought about that, but I didn't do Dazed and Confused with you.
Right.
You just did Go.
Mm-hmm.
So I miss some of them.
Is Go a stoner comedy?
Not really. No, it's not a comedy at all, but it's just... because you did it last weekend, there was some drug use in it.
There is a lot of drug use in it. Although I feel like the main drug in that movie is ecstasy.
It is, correct.
So why this movie? Why did you want to talk about Half-Baked, Sam?
There's a bunch of stoner movies, but this one, I think for our generation, this is it. This, to me, is one of the most quotable movies. One of my closest friends has never touched any marijuana, edible, smokable, anything, but she can quote this movie. It's just, I think it's just one of the movies that I've watched forever and ever and ever, and it's just a fun one.
When did you first see it?
Probably when it came out. So, okay. Not in the theater, but pretty soon after. I think it came out in 98. So, I was a junior in high school, so maybe my senior year.
Okay.
I've seen it a lot.
All right. Were you high when you saw it back then?
No, I wasn't in college yet. That's kind of where it started. I dabbled in high school, but I wasn't in that weed van that smelled like patchouli that was always parked on the other side of the lot. That was never like, or the smoker's park.
Yeah.
You remember all that?
Yeah.
Our school had a smoker's park.
We had one in high school, too. It was called The Wall. And The Wall is where you were able to smoke. Not marijuana. I mean, that, they couldn't smoke weed there, could they?
No, but there was somebody in your year who had a van. I'm not going to say their name now. But they had a van that was always just like a stoner van. And it always stunk. And everybody knew. I mean, I was 2 years younger than you. And you knew who was coming out of that van walking into your class when you smelled them.
All right, remind me after we're done recording. I need to ask you who it is. Because the kids that I remember who were super stoners in high school were, I think, a year or two above me.
Okay.
And I remember they had a hippie van and it was always...
Maybe it was them. Then it was only that 1 year. Then I was a freshman and they were seniors. It's probably the one person. It probably is the same person.
Okay.
Our school wasn't that big.
No, it wasn't. That's why I'm very curious.
Yeah, it's probably the same person.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. James, had you seen Half-Baked before?
I've seen this film once before. I definitely missed it on the first run. And I think I might have seen this after I kind of heard more about Dave Chappelle.
Okay.
And because I think when it came out, it was probably like, this this is the Jim Brewer movie because he was the SNL. You know, there's always like SNL guys get their first big shot at a movie.
Yeah.
And that was, I guess, his shot at the, you know, the big leagues. And Dave Chappelle was kind of the, I don't think I would have known who he was at the time. If I had seen this at the time, I might have gone, where do I remember this guy from? Oh yeah, the Nutty Professor. He was the comedian.
Right.
You know, I would have said that. Right. That's
and Robin Hood Men in Tights.
I was going to say, yeah.
I hadn't seen Robin Hood Men in Tights until this podcast.
Right. So, he's Achu.
Achu.
Yes. Yeah.
Dave Chappelle is arguably on that Mount Rushmore of all-time comedy legends, of stand-up comedy legends.
You think so?
I think Dave Chappelle has also proven himself, whether or not not getting into any of these controversial topics, but his popularity has been around for 20 years, and that is amazing for a comedian. You know, Andrew Dice Clay was really, really popular for a while.
Yeah.
And, you know, Rob Schneider, you know, the copy machine guy. I remember reading a thing about SNL back in the day when everyone was kind of jealous that Rob Schneider was the big breakout star. You know, to be funny for 20 years, you know, there's very few people. Adam Sandler is one of the very few people doing comedy for 20 straight years.
George Carlin did.
But he's not doing stand-up.
Mm.
Right, exactly. And even doing stand-up, you got a few people that can do it. Seinfeld, George Carlin did it. Ray Romano's still doing it. He's still doing stand-up. My whole point of this was that I'm watching this movie in an era where I pre-know that Dave Chappelle is very funny. So it does make it a little bit biased, I have to admit.
I get what you're saying. I mean, yeah, he has been doing stand-up for a long time. And I think, I didn't mean to nitpick, but like, yeah, Adam Sandler wasn't doing stand-up that whole time. Seinfeld hasn't been consistently doing stand-up throughout the decades. Like, he disappears. He goes on hiatus for long stretches of time, then does a couple of stand-up specials, and then goes away. Whereas Chappelle has been, I think, more consistent just doing, performing as a stand-up comic.
Well, you're not a Jerry Seinfeld fan, but he had a residency at the in Manhattan for like 10 years.
Really?
Not 10 years, but years and years. I saw him a few years ago. He used to have like once a month, sort of like Billy Joel, how he used to have
He still does.
His last one, I think, is this July.
It is.
It's not his retirement concert, I don't believe.
No.
But I think it's he's ending his Massive
Garden. I am so excited. We're talking about Billy Joel and weed, which don't normally go together, but they are two of my favorite conversations. Either way, I'm so happy you did that, James. It's like, you know. Yes, it's a big deal. Yes, I think your own personal Mount Rushmore of comedy is super specific. Because, like, for me, yes, George Carlin and Dave Chappelle would definitely be on there. I think Chappelle is brilliant. I think the fact that his stand-ups are still really good. You know, he does have longevity. As soon as they come out, we always watch them immediately, usually
really?
A couple of times. Yeah, oh yeah, we're big Chappelle fans. There are a couple of things I don't necessarily agree with, but he's a comedian, and you kind of have to look past it when they're comedians.
You know, again, it depends what you think about Mount Rushmore. Like, Al, right now, yes or no, would Jerry Seinfeld belong on a Mount Rushmore of stand-up comedians?
I honestly don't know. I mean, if you were talking about TV sitcoms,
I'm saying stand-up comedians.
Just based on stand-up, I don't know. I mean, I did always like his stand-up more than his sitcom, but I hated his sitcom, so that's not saying much. Honestly, I'm probably not the best person to answer that. I don't watch a lot of stand-up specials.
This is why you're not funny.
I'm delightful. Fuck you. I tell people constantly how funny I am.
Oh, do you?
I will say, I was watching some Dave Chappelle stand-up the other day just to kind of get a little sense of
which one?
It was a bunch of clips strung together. Just the elephant in the room. The transphobic shit, it's not funny. I don't think it's funny. I watched a handful of out-of-context clips, so fine, maybe that wasn't the best way to consume that content.
Right.
But, one, I didn't think it was funny. Two, it's just punching down. And he's better than that. He does not need to punch down. And I also despised his latest SNL monologue. It was 2022. After Kanye went batshit, and he's like, I'm going to talk about Kanye. And I was like, okay, good. This guy's going to rip into fucking Kanye. And I was excited because I liked the Chappelle SNL monologues like recently. The 2016 one, he won an Emmy. It was perfect.
It was great. That opening line was so funny. He reads a piece of paper. He goes, "I condemn anti-Semitism," and kind of a PR statement. Then he goes, "And that, Kanye, is how you buy yourself some time." And because you're supposed to just say the statement, right. "I apologize for what I said." Instead, at the time, Kanye doubled down. Like, I think that point I go, that's really funny. And then, yeah, I remember thinking, wait, huh?
Yeah, then Chappelle was basically agreeing with everything Kanye said. And he's like, "It is true that Jews run Hollywood, but Kanye, you're not supposed to say it." And I was like, okay, I'm sorry. I'm waiting for like a comic punchline here. And there was none. And I was like, fuck you, Chappelle. Like, this is not what we need right now. So I'm not the biggest fan of his stand-up.
So I understand because he pushes the envelope. However, he has said it. You don't have to watch his shit. You know what I mean? He is a comedian. Not you, but generally. Like,
right.
He's a comedian. You kind of have to know what you're getting yourself into. Comedians will always offend. I mean, Dad let us watch Andrew Dice Clay when we were little. We shouldn't have. He was offensive then. It's a different type of offensive. Do I think people maybe are a little too serious when it comes to things comedic? Sure. Does he pick on people? Yes. He's a comedian. Either laugh it off or don't go to his shows.
To be clear, I'm not like out to cancel the guy. That is my solution. I don't find him funny, and I don't watch him. That's the beginning, middle, and end.
But did you find him funny 25 years ago?
I also never really watched Chappelle's show. I know.
I know the famous, you know, the slaps and the pancake Prince basketball. I saw a bunch of the things. The black blind white supremacist is the greatest. That is brilliant writing.
He doesn't know he's black.
But, Half-Baked, this movie is about four friends, Thurgood, Scarface, Brian, and Kenny, who all live together and love to get high. One night, Kenny buys munchies and feeds junk food to a police horse, accidentally killing the animal. To raise bail money, Thurgood steals medical marijuana from his company, and he and his friends sell it around New York City. Thurgood also starts a relationship with Mary Jane, a woman who hates drugs. Meanwhile, the drug dealing goes so well that Thurgood and his friends are threatened by another dealer, Samson Simpson. Out of desperation, Thurgood tries to rob his company, but he is arrested. He then agrees to wear a wire to take down Samson and have all charges against Kenny dropped.
All right, so when this movie came out, it was not a hit, right? It became more popular later on home video, but it didn't do well at the box office, I don't think.
That's absolutely true. The film didn't really do that well. It had a budget of $8 million. It's a very low-budget film. It opened at number 6 on January 16th, 1998, with $7.7 million. It didn't quite beat the film that I'm guessing Samantha was watching that weekend. It was January of 1998. Which would make Samantha the exact demographic to be watching this film for maybe the third time, if she's like my little sister.
No, Sam was not that kid.
Really?
What are we
okay.
Are we talking about the vampire crap?
No.
What am I talking about, Al?
You're talking about Titanic. That's not
my
sister.
Oh, God, no.
Oh, no. Okay.
No, but funny story real quick.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever told you this story. That movie was so long that I told Mom I was going to see it, and I ended up being able to go to a party in Jersey and come back during the time that movie ran. What was it, like 4 hours? Doesn't matter now. There's no statute of limitation.
No, but
I'm
you know
an
what?
Adult.
Fuck you.
Fuck you harder.
Because when you did that shit, you know who got in trouble? Me.
How'd you get in trouble for that? She didn't know. She knows now.
Because you would come home late and then my curfew always got
you were
earlier.
In college already, probably.
Yeah, it always ended up back on me.
I'm going to tell her not to listen to this.
The movie wound up making $17 million at the box office. So, you know, it maybe actually did make some money. It has several DVD editions, and that alone makes me think that it must have made some money.
This was one of the DVDs I know you guys talk about a lot, like DVDs that were in everybody's collection or like you stole.
Yeah.
This was a DVD that everybody had in college.
Did you have it on DVD?
I did. Okay. Not everybody at Cornell, apparently, but everywhere cool places.
Whoa.
Not the Ivies. They weren't smoking then. But
I mean, people were. All right, so there's got to be stuff that you want to talk about with this movie, right, Sam?
Yeah, like I said, I think it's one of the most quotable movies there is, especially if you did grow up watching it like I pretty much did.
Like what? Give me a quotable line.
Doctor says I need a bacchiotomy. Or fuck you, fuck you, you're cool, fuck you, I'm out.
That one I'd heard before.
Because it's definitely everywhere. I can do the whole thing. I want to talk to Samson. Like that whole rap. I mean, there's just a lot in that movie that can be referred to.
I will say that this is the second film ever, Team America, World Police being the first. But I didn't think I would ever laugh out loud at another sex scene. And I thought this was, first of all, it was a really well done sex scene because in a weird way, it's sexy. There's no nudity. You don't need nudity in this one. It's hysterical. And the whole time he's just singing, I got some booty, I got some booty. And then you see the two of them kind of in their underwear and they're laughing and almost wrestling in bed.
He goes, Mary J. was a caring nurturer. Like, it's just, it's funny. But the main thing about that scene is who's holding the camera? They're both looking at the camera the whole time. I mean, it's not a selfie.
Right, and the scene is just, yeah, these snapshots from like a Polaroid or right. something. Well, let's talk about the voiceover. Of course, I hate voiceover. And I do think that the voiceover in this movie is doing the thing that annoys me about voiceovers. It's violating the storytelling rule, show don't tell, and it's just hand-holding for the audience. But I think that there's a reason for that. My guess is that the screenwriters, Dave Chappelle and his partner Neil Brennan, did that deliberately because they figured that everyone watching this movie was going to be really fucking stoned. And so, therefore, maybe needed the handholding.
I think that is a stereotype, and I quite frankly resent it, because you can follow the movie without him speaking to you, but sure.
That's kind of my point. You don't need it.
Right.
But maybe they felt that
they'd make it remedial.
Yes, exactly. For those people who are more than half-baked, but were super baked, and maybe would have a hard time following the plot, which is not terribly hard to follow, but, you know, maybe that was there to help the stoners who are watching the movie.
Sure.
You know, Al, you always say this. I know your point. I think, Al, you might be nailing it. You don't always need exposition. And sometimes, say, maybe in a children's story, maybe you explain it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And this, maybe they are treating it like a children's story. I think you might be right. Have you guys ever heard, I don't know if it's a famous story, but when Dave Chappelle was being honored at the Kennedy Center Awards, and Neil Brennan, he talks about this crazy story where Dave Chappelle calls him one day and he just goes, hey, if Universal calls, just tell them we're working on a stoner movie together, okay? We're co-writing it. And then Universal calls him and he says, we're working on it. And they ask, when can you deliver it? He says, 30 days. And then he calls Chappelle 29 days later and he's like, hey, we really gotta get on top of this stoner movie. And Chappelle's reply was, what stoner movie? And, you know, the final product of this film, it doesn't seem like someone wrote 28 drafts of this of this screenplay until they got it perfectly.
No.
You know, it was something like, you know, we're just going to get them to sell weed. Why? We don't want them to be drug dealers. No, they'll be drug dealers to, like, help their friend. Why? Because their friend's in jail. Oh, well, we don't want them to be in jail because jail, that means he's a bad person. It'll be something, like, funny. Like, he, like, killed a horse. Killing a horse, that's terrible. No, it'll be, like, a stoner way of killing him because he was being nice to him, feeding him chips and crackers, but it turns out the horse is diabetic. And, you know, that's something you probably think of when you have one day to deliver a plot to Universal. I don't think that you really need a plot for these kind of movies. I've never seen Cheech and Chong, but I assume it's like a bunch of little vignettes.
Did you notice Cheech or Chong in this movie at all?
Yes,
you got that cameo.
Yes.
Did you?
Well, it's Chong.
Chong, yeah, yes. I wanted to give you like a multiple choice just in case it wasn't obvious to either of you.
I knew that was okay. Chong. I am more familiar with Chong from That 70s Show,
okay,
which I did watch pretty religiously in college, and he was a friend of Hyde, I think, if I'm remembering right.
I never watched that one, actually.
Okay. That was a stoner sitcom, kind of.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the cameos, because this movie has a lot of them. And some, but not all, are stoner icons like Tommy Chong,
Snoop,
right?
Willie Nelson,
and
my favorite one—the one I was thinking of when I first thought of this film—the famous rehab scene.
Oh,
Bob Saget.
He's my favorite cameo in this movie.
Right.
Apparently, the movie was filmed in Toronto in the summer of 97, the same time that Dirty Work was being filmed at the same time, and the cast and crew stay at the same hotel. So Bob Saget famously directed Dirty Work. That's how he got involved in his short cameos.
He goes, "You ever suck dick for some weed? Huh? I suck dick for coke. I see him." It's like the interaction between the two of them. And that black guy, actually, forget his name, but he had been on The Real World, the second season of the initial Real World back in the day. So he was a comedian too. I forget his name.
And the whole joke is that marijuana is not addictive. Right. I do feel like I have seen a lot of stuff about cannabis use disorder. That, like, it is a thing, and with the legalization, people need to be aware of it.
There's a label for absolutely everything. But real quick with a cameo, I didn't want to forget. Did you notice the first, I think it's the first cameo in the movie, is the introduction to Sir Smoke a Lot's video?
Yes, Tracy Morgan.
Yeah, it was Tracy Morgan. You could have smoked weed with Tracy Morgan, couldn't you have, Al? I am so mad at you for this, always.
I definitely could have smoked with Tracy Morgan, and I didn't. Also, by the way, I kinda sort of could have smoked with Snoop.
What?
Yeah.
Come on!
I was thinking about that. Because in this movie, his role is he's the guy who takes your weed and then disappears.
He's a scavenger.
Right, exactly. In real life, the one time I met him, he was very forthcoming with his weed. It was at a work event. I was in his trailer with my boss and my boss's boss, and I think even my boss's boss's boss, and he offered weed to all of us. I was the only guy. There were young women. Maybe
Nerd.
That's why. Well, they all said no.
Nerds.
So if all of my bosses said no, then I couldn't say yes.
You come back later. Bye, guys. Okay, yeah, I'll see you upstairs at the meeting. Hey, Snoop.
I do think this is kind of a Ray from Ghostbusters situation. Now, two rules for life, pretty much. When someone asks you if you're a god,
you say yes.
When Snoop offers you to smoke weed with
you
him...
You say, fuck yeah!
You say, fuck yeah.
Helen, I was mad enough about Tracy Morgan. Snoop?
I was with my boss, and my boss's boss, and my boss's boss's boss. There was no way I was going to smoke with Snoop in that situation. And also, I have never smoked anything in my life.
All right. First of all, you could have gotten another job. And second of all, not for lack of trying. I've tried for a really long time.
Fine. I was going to embarrass myself.
You're embarrassing me right now.
Fine. Whatever. The point was, Snoop in real life is different from his character. But some of the other cameos, like Jon Stewart, Janine Garofalo, I don't associate them with pot. I mean, maybe they smoke, but you definitely smoke.
Everybody smokes, especially now.
Fine. Also, though, I did think it was kind of funny how, with these cameos, they are making fun of people who smoke. Not like in a mean way, not in a derogatory way or anything like that. Like, they're having fun with potheads. They even do a thing about the worst thing you can be is a pothead. No one wants to be a pothead. And then they kind of do the joke. Right. And they stamp all their heads. They're all potheads, but they're all in denial about it. I thought that was kind of funny because I feel like usually in stoner movies, at least the ones I've seen, I haven't seen a million of them, but usually it's more about like, yay, pot is fun. Let's get high and have a good time. Whereas in this movie, they kind of are saying, yeah, you don't want to be a fucking pothead. The movie ends with him giving up pot, maybe forever, maybe for however long the relationship is. They call out that, like, oh, you don't have any short-term memory because you're always high. And I think, like, voiceover comes in. It messes with your memory. I wasn't expecting that kind of finger wagging. Yeah, about, like, the bad side of smoking pot.
There definitely is a little bit of the 80s and 90s drugs are bad, kids, in this film. The whole gateway drug thing.
But yeah, that's just Mary Jane who says that, and she's pissed because her dad got caught with we don't know what.
Yes, but I think she is seen in some ways as the voice of reason, and this is the right way to go. And, you know, one thing we haven't talked about, the real test of time thing and the elephant in the room when it comes to weed is is an entirely different world. Right. And in most states in the United States, marijuana, cannabis, weed, whatever you want to call it, is legal in to some extent, either medicinally or it's recreational use, or you can even grow it yourself. There's very few states that are completely banned, and this film really has that element of it's so underground, and these people that are having smoke weed are anti-society, and that they're the waiters, and they're the janitors. I actually kind of like that they show that Harlan Williams is a kindergarten teacher.
I was going to comment on that, actually.
And they didn't go in a weird way either. They kind of showed him that he was very sweet. They could have made some stupid joke that would have been just totally inappropriate. Harlan Williams is always kind of adorable.
As somebody who might be somewhat familiar with this, the line is, he does wonders for those kids' self-esteem. And I will tell you that if you're not baked out of your mind, but half-baked or a little high, and you're around kids, you want to have fun with them. You're creative. That's half the point of weed, is to be creative. And you have fun. And who wants to do Play-Doh? Me. Who wants to jump on Miss Samantha? Me. Who wants to do... Fine, I just said it. Again, I don't care. I haven't been a teacher in so long. You know what? It's better than being in a bad mood. It's fine.
The world is completely different. New York City, you walk around and it's more common to see a marijuana weed store than a Starbucks.
Yeah, well, I wanted to touch on that. So there is a line in voiceover where Chappelle says, or Thurgood says, it's very easy to get weed in New York City. And that line has stood the test of time, but it hasn't in the same way, because in the movie, it's like you can go to the bodega where they never remember you. He has to show his black ass.
Oh, that's black ass.
Right.
You showed us earlier.
Right. And that's how he knows. Or you can go to the Rastafarians in Washington Square Park, I think it is.
Right.
And he's like, but he doesn't trust them.
Right. Do you know why?
Because it's not real weed? I forget.
As a suburban kid, we knew nothing about like city life, except it was a very famous thing that Washington Square Park is undercover cops, and they're all going to bust you if you try to buy weed. Oh. And that was like a famous thing.
I think it was just that it was shit. It was like dirt. It was swag.
Oh, okay.
Do you know
okay.
swag? Do you know that word?
Yes, okay. I know what that means.
Because when he says, nah, I don't trust you, I thought he was saying he thinks he's a cop.
Oh, okay. Oh, and then there's also like dealers who will come to your apartment. And
right.
the way that it works in this movie is not how it would right. work today. And I think the scene that really, really leapt out at me from a test of time perspective is when they go to the club
right.
and they're giving out the free samples of the weed with their phone number. Oh, if you like this free sample, you'll call us and you'll pay for it. I get it. It makes sense in the movie, but it doesn't make sense in a 2024 point of view. Because if you were at a club and some stranger handed you a bag of weed, I mean, maybe this is just me, the old man,
don't.
Saying it, but like, who the fuck would take that? You don't know what it, you don't know
what it's a rolled up joint, and he's got a business card. There are pop ups everywhere.
A lot
There's
of
a
people pop-ups.
Yes. Why not? I mean,
really?
I mean, okay. What I was going to comment on with this is, yeah, of course, there's corner stores now. But you wouldn't have to rely on, like, showing your ass to somebody who doesn't remember you in a really dusty-ass bodega, because the vape shops, the head shops, there's pop-ups now all the time. There's pop-ups that are like a weed flea market. There's just a whole bunch of different people with different kinds of stuff, and they're almost like competing against each other. It's a peaceful place, you know, nothing ever goes on there, but it's just different vendors with different weed. So if you're going to get weed from one of those guys now, it's not much different than meeting somebody you don't know who's going to give you a roll joint. You know what I mean?
I get that, but in New York City, there's just so many weed stores on every fucking block. If you're in a club and you want to get high and a stranger hands you a little baggie, I feel like I would be more suspicious of that as opposed to walking into a storefront and buying something. I mean, to be fair, all of those storefronts are still operating in this legal gray area, but I feel like that would be safer. Maybe it's not. I mean, really, when push comes to shove, I mean, that's
right.
a fair point. But setting up the dealer operation isn't what you would do today. Today, they would set up a storefront.
Right. Or they would show up at a pop-up. I mean, I also noticed in terms of a test of time thing, they have the house phone lines going crazy for Mr. Nice Guy, which is the weed company they set up.
Right. The counterpoint is if they set up a shop, they would only have one product. But then there could be like a funny scene where, you know, like, oh, they're trying to make gummies and they don't know how to do it.
If you were updating it, you mean now?
Yes, exactly. Okay, right. Exactly. Correct.
To a point. I mean, they end up getting a bunch of different kinds of weed. But yes, I understand your point.
Yeah. You know, one comedian, I'm guessing you, I just feel like you love this guy. He has a very, very small part in the film, but he plays the role of Guy on the Couch. That's Stephen Wright.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He's a very famous, he's a comedian known for his one-liners.
And his deadpan delivery.
Right, his deadpan delivery. It's a ridiculous stoner movie character to have.
The character's name is The Guy on the Couch, and they call him Guy or The Guy. Get it? I thought that was pretty stupid.
I mean, he's just a guy that nobody knows why he's there. Listen, it is stupid, but it's a fun movie. It's a stoner movie. It is ridiculously dumb. We didn't even talk about how the horse gets killed. First of all, the horse is butternuts, right?
Buttercup,
right. Say it, butter stuff. Butternuts, right? Buttercup.
Right.
But leading up to that is the whole munchie conversation where they send Kenny out to get him. That whole thing is ridiculous. I want some chips and some dip, some sour cream onions. I mean, like, it's ridiculous. Two pizzas.
Yeah, it's a very, very long list. Which also does include, like, some vegetables, I think, right?
Yeah, I think he does say that. He's water, a whole lot of water, Funyuns. But yeah, I think he does say vegetable at some point. But we need some ice cream, those little ice cream bars. We'll make s'mores, man. But if you notice, he does get all of those things.
He does. In one of, like, the IMDb trivia things I saw, it said that it is possible for a horse to be diabetic, but it's very rare.
Okay, well, good.
That makes me happy that someone in the world decided to type that into IMDb to add that for the trivia. They're like, oh, somebody needs to know. And I'm quoting it on the podcast, so I guess, well done.
Yeah.
Did anyone notice what the name of the pharmaceutical company was called?
Yeah, frankincense and myrrh.
Yeah.
So, like, frankincense and myrrh,
yeah.
Which is these herbs... It's a Christian story,
like biblical,
from the
right?
Bible,
yeah.
And frankincense is something that you do burn like an incense. So it's kind of a funny name for that.
The conversations with the scientist are hilarious too. Janitor, can you go fetch it for me? You know, and then he shoves some weed in his pocket. I mean, Thurgood, here he is the custodian, and he doesn't know that there's all this medical marijuana in the building. So once he finds out, it's kind of how it gets the ball rolling with the whole story. But I mean, their interactions are hilarious. It says, well, if you ever need a guinea pig, my grandfather was part of the Tuskegee experiments. Like,
oh my God. I mean, do you guys know what the Tuskegee experiments are?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, it's that is some dark humor.
Yeah.
But it also flies over your head if you don't know what it is.
Right.
And apparently in real life, Dave Chappelle's grandfather was in those experiments.
Wow.
I wonder if he wrote that in or if it's just like...
he wrote the script.
Yeah.
I guess so. I think the low budgetness of it is part of what makes it so funny, but the part that when they get really high and they start flying through the air,
yeah.
It's like an incredibly low budget, Superman kind of green screen. There's this kind of, off brand copyright free Superman, John Williams Superman theme, but later at the big, there's a big, fist fight at the end. They do use the official, Batman from the 1960s, mm-hmm. The real Batman theme. Song. So I love that it was like off-brand Superman and on-brand Batman in the same film. And this film is not from Warner Brothers, so you'd think they own the rights to that stuff.
Yeah, but I could imagine that the John Williams rights would be far more expensive. Also, when they're thinking about how they're going to make all of the money, it's a Jeopardy theme mm-hmm. sound alike, not the real theme. And having worked in television, there are these companies who will get you a sound-alike version that is just reminiscent enough, but not close enough where you can get sued.
Hmm. So when Thurgood and Mary Jane finally go out on their date, he's broke. Because as he was saying, he's like, we're not drug dealers, we're fundraisers. They're only dealing drugs. It's not even drugs, it's weed. You know, they're just dealing weed to be able to get Kenny out of jail. So they go on this date, and at the beginning of the date, Thurgood has like $8 in change. And this is definitely a test of time thing, but it's also, it's not supposed to be serious. So they go for a walk.
Right.
And they're walking all over town, and then he sees a hot dog stand, and he gets her a hot dog and a drink, which was $4.50, which I don't know. I don't like dirty water dogs. I think they're disgusting. So
they
I won't eat that. Yeah. But I mean, that seems a little low. And then they took a cab. to get ice cream, the cab was only $4.25, yes. Which, I mean, really, come on. Right. And then in order to get the ice cream, he puts his hand into a homeless guy's cup, and instead of dropping off, instead of adding, he subtracts.
Right.
So he just grabs everything. He didn't get that much because the ice cream was only $3.43. So the point is that Thurgood was able to kind of maneuver a budget-friendly date, but it's complete bullshit now. That would never stand to the test of time at all. Those prices are just ridiculous.
Right, but also today he could take a Lyft and put it on his credit card, right, and, you know, still be broke.
Right.
Because you don't pay for these things with cash anymore.
No, not at all.
I mean, most people.
Right. I was going to say, too, one of my favorite scenes in the movie, this to me is almost like a little bit of a throwback to Goodfellas, where it's like we're not spending money that's not technically ours. Where in Goodfellas, Jimmy says, don't buy anything big. And then they go, you know, the one guy gets a Cadillac. And yeah, it's like these assholes in this movie. The one gets Jerry Garcia's ashes, or so he thinks.
Right.
And Thurgood comes back with a Rottweiler. Killer is the Rottweiler. When he ends up dying at the end, Brian goes off on this stupid stoner tirade. He goes, to understand who Killer was, you have to understand where he comes from. See, he was born to a three-legged bitch of a mother. And it's just, it's so, that story is so stupid. And then his brother is Kibbles, and he doesn't want to have to fight his brother. Nah, man, that's my brother. And he ends up addicted to crack, and then he throws himself out the window, and then he's dead. I mean, that whole thing to me is just so fucking funny. A three-legged bitch of a mother. Like, come on. As stupid as this movie is, it's hilarious.
See, I thought that was going to pay off in some way, that, like, they think that the dog was killed by Samson, the other drug dealer, but then he comes up with this whole story. I was like, oh, well, maybe there will be some reveal that the dog died for some other reason. No. Then Samson calls and is like, did you get my message? And yeah, he killed the dog. And I don't know. I thought that was kind of anticlimactic. They could have done something else with it.
Yeah, it is. But again, it doesn't have to make sense for what it is. I mean, Samson, can we talk about like all his strapped bitches with their weapons? Ridiculous. I mean, I don't know. I don't know any weed dealer who, first of all, lives in a house or an apartment like that.
Right.
And has many, many, many women just with like a huge artillery ready to protect him.
I mean, I don't know where drug dealers live and what their homes are like, but that set had at least some production design.
Yeah.
I feel like most of the rest of the movie kind of didn't. And you can kind of see the low budget at that club scene where they're giving out the weed samples. I was like, what the fuck kind of place is that supposed to be? That looked like no bar or club or any nighttime establishment I have ever seen in my life. It was just a room.
Yeah, pretty much was. With music and like strobe lights.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that last scene also has a titty. So there's that too. There's finally a boob when they're wrestling around. Damn, girl, your titty. That's a folly.
Everyone stops.
Everybody stops a lot.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of going back to their whole plot of like how they're making money and that's why they're drug dealing. It is very short-sighted because they're raising all this money for bail money to get him out of prison so he won't be raped in prison, which is a joke in Dirty Work 2, the movie that was filming at the same time. Huh. But then what? If you can bail him out, he's still going to have to stand trial for the horse, and like then we'll need a lawyer, and there will need to be more money after posting bond.
You wouldn't be a good stoner. You're thinking too much. Yeah, okay, fine. They didn't think through the legal process. They just thought of the beginning part, but they didn't want him to be somebody's bitch, man.
Also, $1 million bail for this?
For a like, horse.
Well, because he was a cop. He
yeah,
was,
I guess
there,
so.
The joke is he wasn't a horse, but right, he was a hero cop, right, who was killed in the line of duty. And they're not mentioning the fact that he was a horse.
One of the great lines, too, and I'm going to word this very delicately. When he first walks out of the store and he says to the horse, hey, girl, you're hungry? A woman walks by and she goes, fuck you, N-word. If you ever watch a cut version on, like, Comedy Central, she goes, up yours, honky! And it's so funny because, what the fuck? Again, quotable. I can quote this movie all day long.
You can.
Yes. You should.
I won't. But let me ask you, Sam, do you think that Half-Baked stands the test of time?
I do. There are things about it, like we had said, they weren't using cell phones. They were using landlines. Actually, this is an aside. When Mary Jane figures out that Mr. Nice Guy is Thurgood, I mean, she had his number before anyway, and it's not like it was two separate numbers because there were no cell phones then.
Right.
Or if there were, they were just very, you know, starting to come out. So when he shows up at her door, that shouldn't have been such a big surprise because it was the same phone number.
But also, he is shocked when she opens the door
right.
to her apartment.
That too.
Like, right. he knows where she lives and he's like, hey, you must love weed. And then...
It was a trap.
It was a trap. And like, she knew anyway, but it just... didn't make any sense that he would be surprised.
True. Did you recognize her from anything? I don't think you guys have done this movie. She was in one other thing I can think of, Mary Jane.
No.
You ever see The Craft?
No. Okay. I know of it, but have never seen
she's
it.
In that too. I think she's very pretty. I don't know.
She is. I agree.
I don't like when she's hot dog. It's a very like drawn out when they're on their date and he's getting her like a hot dog. Hot dog. It's like too New York-y. Yeah, whatever.
Okay.
But yes, so there are things, and like I said before, with a bodega, you don't have to go into some dusty rat hole to find weed, so that doesn't stand up anymore. But I'm going to do a callback to my first ever episode when we did Harold and Kumar, and I kind of referenced similar things, and I said, well, they wouldn't have to drive to White Castle, they could DoorDash it. Right. They wouldn't have to look for weed, they could also get that delivered. I said that those things didn't stand up. You said, but it's a buddy movie, it's about friendship. So is this, you know, this Aww. Is, a, but it is, this is a buddy movie too. They're trying to get their buddy out of jail, you know, they go through a whole stupid thing to go through it. But yeah, the whole thing, if Harold and Kumar stood up because of the underlying buddy movie theme, I guess, then so does this. They're stoner movies. Stoners hang out together. We're a very good people. We don't want to fight. We want to eat our munchies and not kill horses and just hang out and laugh. It's stupid shit like this movie. So yes, it holds up because it's a classic.
Okay.
Yeah, man.
All right. James, what do you think?
You know, I mentioned earlier that the film really takes place in a different world than today, in that it takes place in a world of the illegality of weed, and that also puts these people in sort of a criminal element versus today. No, you're learning that everyone from professors to drivers and, you know, pilots, they all use. And so I think that there is an overall tone that's different about this film, because there's one character that I really dislike in this film, and that's Jim Brewer's character. He's squinting the entire time,
yeah.
And he's like, what, man? What? Oh, gay man? It's kind of this California surfer stoner dude. I very much prefer the kind of that Seth Rogen kind of, yeah, right, he's going to be more of I kind of like when they went to these kind of people that smoke, Jon Stewart's character and Jean Garofalo's, the people that will talk and talk and talk, and the people that are artistic, and the people who just want to do everything on weed. And that's a little more realistic to me, or more interesting than this kind of, what was the guy's name from Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
Spicoli.
Spicoli. Nice. You know, that Spicoli, like, it just seems to be the portrayal of someone who's never tried weed and wants to write a weed character would do Jim Brewer's character.
It's a stereotype.
Yeah,
I mean, I feel like that character is kind of silly. I like Dave Chappelle's character. I admitted it from the beginning. I am biased with now knowing that Dave Chappelle, you are a funny guy, versus also a little bit on the other side, Jim Brewer, I don't really find you funny the way I probably did in 1998 when you were, he was like the
go-boy.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. That was not a very good time for SNL. That's right after they, I think it was the 97 Massacre or something
like
when they got rid of all the, you know, Sandler. And everyone. I understand why this film was a flop. Stoner films in a theater, you know, back then, maybe just don't really work. I think they work better on VHS and DVD until, you know, the eras of Pineapple Express and stuff when it was a little more mainstream. I guess people watched that. But this film surprised me. I thought it was going to be really stupid, but it really boils down to you knowing what kind of film this is. You're going to have at the very end, how do they save the day? Because it turns out the guy really did buy a supernatural pouch with the ashes of Jerry Garcia, who comes to life and then, you know, saves the day by hitting the bad guy with his guitar.
That guy looked nothing like Jerry Garcia.
You know, that's the kind of thing you could have in these films. So I think it works, and it's stupid, but the film is 82 minutes long. It knows exactly what it is. There are some stupid parts, things that I think the whole 80s don't do drugs thing is a little bit outdated, and you know, getting them to realize like my life shouldn't be about weed. Because I like that there's a great scene where he tells the guys like, can you guys shut up about weed for like 2 seconds? And these guys, like, they can't stop talking about it. And that is something that's very bad. But the plot is irrelevant. I think this film is funny for what it is. It stands the test of time. What do you think, Al?
Okay, so you mentioned like the after-school special drugs are bad kids kind of thing. Did either of you see the post-credit scene?
Yes, they have like a cheesy say no to drugs or nope to dope type of thing at the end of it. But it was ironic.
I guess it was ironic, but also it's not really a joke. It's just them sitting there with like the actors who played the kid versions of themselves in the first scene of like, if you want to learn more about drugs, go to your local library. And I was kind of waiting for there to be some kind of twist, you know, like some kind of punchline, and there isn't. Then the movie just ends. And I was like, oh.
The ending as it is very abrupt. I mean, the love story. He picks Mary Jane, the woman, over Mary Jane, the weed. And, you know, I had actually read that they had an alternate ending where he was going to throw himself off the bridge if he couldn't smoke. And they tested it with audiences and they were like, no, don't do that. Just have him walk off in the distance with her. What does he say at the end of it? I'm not looking at you when I say this. He says, I love weed, but I really love pussy.
Right. Which also, as a joke, they could have done a better job of setting that up earlier in the movie.
Because you could have both.
Sure. But just talking about Jim Brewer, I did meet him once in real life when I was at SNL. He came by. He was a very lovely guy, a big Mets fan from Valley Stream, Long Island.
Yeah.
Not far from where we grew up. Nope. But that guy really, really hates vaccines. Like, really.
I believe he's a big right-wing comedian. I don't know any of his comedy, so I can't comment whether it's good or bad. But I just know he is in that circuit now.
Paramount all the time.
Yes, he plays at the Paramount all the time.
Yeah.
But as we were kind of talking a little bit about Dirty Work, because, you know, it was filming at the same time and Bob Saget and everything, I did kind of get some similar vibes from Dirty Work to this movie. The plot is there just so that they can make the jokes they want to make.
Of course.
And, you know, they have to raise all of this money. In Dirty Work, it's to save Pops, who's having heart surgery. In this movie, it's to get their buddy out of prison. There's a love story that's tacked on that doesn't make any sense why this beautiful woman would be with this loser. So there are some...
Why is he a loser? Just because he smokes weed?
No, because he's got no direction in life.
He's got a job. He's got friends. He's got a roof over his head. It's a shit roof that he shares with like 4 people and a stranger. But
yeah,
I don't think you should judge Dave Chappelle so harshly or Thurgood.
Fine. The difference is, in my opinion, the jokes in Dirty Work are much, much funnier. The jokes in this movie are not funny. They really seem like they were written by a stoner who is way more than half-baked, who was just trying to come up with something. Okay, you see them floating because the drugs are so good, and then the dog gets high, then the dog flies too! Ba-dum-bum. This isn't fucking funny. It's really sophomoric. It's really stupid. I did wonder while I was watching this movie, should I have been high while watching this? Would I have found this much, much funnier?
I tried. I texted you this week.
I watched it first thing in the morning. I didn't find this movie funny. And we've also been talking about Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. That's a stoner movie. That's really fucking funny and really smart, and it makes sense. There is a plot. There's more to it than just stupid.
Thurgood walked so Harold and Kumar could run.
Fine. Okay, I'll give you that. But I think that Harold and Kumar is a much better script. It's a much better movie. It has the stupid weed jokes, but it has more. This movie just has stupid weed jokes, and I don't think it stands the test of time. Also, just because of all of the weed stuff and how weed is sold and how you can buy it so easily, and you could remake it. You would make a whole lot of changes. I think it would have to be a lot of big changes to make this movie stand up today. Also, you know, the way that you can buy weed in New York City today, April 2024, won't stand the test of time because they're going to have to change it. The whole system is
fucked and broken. And there's a very interesting article in this weekend's New York Times if you want to read about one of these illegal weed shops
that they were trying to shut down. No, I want to smoke my weed and enjoy it. Stop bothering me. Enjoy stuff. You couldn't smoke with Snoop. No, I'm going to get fired. Okay, there's other jobs. I couldn't smoke with Tracy Morgan. Oh, I might cough. Okay, that's cool. He probably would have laughed at you. Not a big deal. Oh, let's read about the weeds in the dispensary. Come on, Grandpa. Relax. It's supposed to calm you down. It's fun. It makes you want to eat. It makes you want to laugh.
The movie or pot?
Both.
Also, though, kind of bigger picture, and I did say this in our Harold and Kumar episode, that, like, I don't really think stoner comedies do stand the test of time. Quick, top of your head, no Googling. What's the most recent stoner comedy that came out?
I would call it, like, This Is the End.
Any of the Rogan movies.
Yeah, okay. Ones. When That's did This Is the End come out?
That it's was gotta be 10 years.
Yeah. It's not a super popular genre.
Sausage Fest. They're coming out with like a second, I think it's a series. They're doing a Sausage Fest series.
Sausage Party.
Sausage Party, yeah.
Same thing. Is Sausage Party even really a stoner movie?
No, I think it's more of a juvenile humor movie.
Yeah.
But you're saying they're the same thing.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that they can be more. I actually did look up recent stoner comedies. There have been some recently that went like straight to streaming. I hadn't heard of any of them. Maybe Clerks 3 or Jay right. and Silent yes. Bob reboot, maybe. Yes. But you could also then make a bigger point about comedies that are kind of a dying genre. There's not a lot of big budget R-rated comedies that are coming out now. There was No Hard Feelings with Jennifer Lawrence, and that kind of bombed. Like it wasn't bad, but it's all of right. comedies is kind of a dying genre, and that's a cyclical thing that'll come around in time. But no, I thought this movie was really, really stupid.
Boo this man! Boo!
I mean, I do hear what you're saying. You know, if the Neil Brennan story from the Kennedy Center is true, then again, I think this film reflects that. That this was not something that was worked on for years.
I mean, have you ever seen, like, Friday or How High? Like, some of the other ones.
No, I have not.
Friday is a great movie.
Friday is a good movie. I wouldn't movie even too. Necessarily call it a stoner movie. You know, there's definitely a stoner, Smokey, Chris Tucker's character. Chris Tucker's, yep. But we'll definitely review that.
Yes, I'll come back.
If you want to come back for Friday, you can. If you only want to do stoner comedies.
I did Devil Wears Prada last time. That is a masterpiece.
Look, you are my sister. You are my baby sister. Aww. You can come back anytime you want to talk about any kind of movie. This Perfect. Was number 6, I believe.
Yes.
Right? Last time you got your Five Timers hoodie.
Correct.
So you'll have to let me know what you want to do for movie number 7.
Sure, I will make it a more serious piece of art noir, or whatever the fuck you say. Noir, whatever, either way.
Film noir.
Film, there you go. But this is fun for what it is. And thank you for letting me come in and let me talk about a lot of weed shit. And Billy Joel, that was a fun surprise.
Anytime, you are always welcome. Thank you for coming back on the show, Sam.
Thanks for having me.
But that's going to do it for us this week. Next week, we are going to talk about Spirited Away. James, you wanted to do a Miyazaki movie, and so here you go. We're going to talk about 2001 Spirited Away.
That'll be interesting. I've never seen one of his films, have you?
I have not. I am looking forward to seeing that. In the meantime, we want you to enjoy 420, of course, safely and responsibly.
Yes.
And we also want you to talk to us on social media. We are at Test of Time Pod, Facebook, X, Instagram, and Threads. Let us know your thoughts on Dave Chappelle and weed and Bob Saget and Janine Garofalo and Jerry Garcia and Superman sound-alikes and all of these things. We love hearing from you. And get super baked and send us a tweet, man.
Poke up.
Safely and responsibly. And we'll see you next time, everybody.
Bye.
Later.